Okay. Oh, well.
I think let's make a start, shall we, recognising that it's apparently an important day in some part of the world. Shall we try and skip through our work as quickly as we can today and start with a list of the present and apologies? Thanks, Christina.
Sure. From the CCNSO, we have Martin Boyle, Keith Davidson, Dejan Djukic, Desiree Milosevic, Patricia Poblete, and from liaisons we have Carlos Aguera. From staff support and special advisors we have Jaap Akkerhuis, Bart Boswinkel, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernard Turcott. Apologies from Eberhard Lisse and Nigel Roberts. And Matthias Dodel is in the Adobe room. I don't know if it's on the line.
Okay. Thanks. Christina, any further apologies received by anyone? If not, we'll consider that the list of those, or anyone else present on the call whose name wasn't called. No, okay, we will consider that the list of those present and the apologies, thank you. Confirmation of the meeting report for the 10th of November was circulated by Bernie, and Bernie, are there any action points or specific items that are not otherwise covered on the agenda? I can't see any, but anything of significance that we should note?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, any comments from anyone on the meeting report? No, if not, we'll accept that as the report for the 10th of November meeting. Move on to item 3 on the agenda, the significantly interested parties document version 2.8. There was both a red line and a clean copy distributed by Bernie to the list, and the only discussion point I think we had left on that was 7.1.1.1. And Bernie, do you want to talk us through where we've got to? There's been a little bit of debate on the list, so I'm not sure if everyone's fully up to date.
Well, there's been no debate about 7.1.1. I think Nigel proposed the text, and I think pretty much everyone A with it, so it was included as is in the document. You know, can you make me a presenter? I can't touch this. On the deco room. So really, it's the discussion that ensued, which we'll take on as a next point, was that when I circulated the definition of SIP, all of a sudden it got people excited, I guess, and so there was a minor tweak proposed to that. But I would propose to deal with 7111 first, and then we can go back to the definition of SIP, if that's okay with you.
That's an excellent idea. So you are now a presenter, Bernie. So.
Ah, excellent. Share. Recently shared. 2.8. Yay, and we have it. Okay. We've got a minor problem with the red line, but on 7.1.1 it's not a really big problem. So, 7.1.1.1 now reads, this interpretation should not be taken as implying the elimination or replacement of any of the requirements relating to consent of the proposed and current managers, where applicable. So, that's the Nigel clause as is, and I guess it's pretty much our final reading of that specific clause. And I'll be glad to take questions or comments.
Thanks, Bernie. Any questions or comments? Anyone in any way unhappy? I think this is about iteration 8 of this particular clause by now, isn't it? So I think we've done it over fairly solidly. In the hope that we can finally put the whole document to bed on the school. Any final comments from anyone? If not, we will consider the SIP document approved at long last. Thank you all.
Not quite.
Of SIP. The definition may come back and haunt us. Okay.
So we've got 7-1-1 one final time to put that to bed. We've got 2 points that were raised. The first was from Desiree, so I'm glad she's on the call. Hi, Desiree.
Hi. Yes, I've asked for the incumbent operator to be included in that definition, as I recall.
I'm sorry I missed that, Desiree. You're not pushing that anymore?
Well, I think I wanted to. I'm saying that that Becky has sent a reply saying that is understood, but I wanted to discuss it on a call if anybody else felt that it should still be there, because it was removed from an earlier version of the document where we had the operator included in the definition of.
Yes, that is correct.
Significantly interested party.
Yeah, and just to give the full background to everyone, if it's a redelegation, the section on 3.6 on the transfer from RFC 1591 is very clear that the proposed and incumbent operator have to give the okay. The question that remains, which we will be discussing next document, is whether section 3.4 of RFC 1591, significantly interested parties, applies transfer / redelegation. If it does in this case, I could see some point to it, but this being said, as Becky discussed on the list, the fact that we have others that have direct, material, legitimate, and demonstrable interest in the operation of the CCTLD certainly automatically covers incumbent operators. So I'll throw it open to the floor at this point for guidance. I guess from the exec side, we don't feel it's critical at this point. If we need to, we may go back and revisit it later.
Any comments for Bernie? Any guidance?
So I wouldn't. I would say that in trying to understand how this definition would be looked at, it does seem. It could seem obvious that others that have direct, material, legitimate, and demonstrable interest in the operation of the CCTLD does include the operator, but in my opinion, it wouldn't hurt adding such as the current operator.
Okay, thanks, Desiree. And Martin has his hand up. Martin.
Thanks, Keith. I suppose because I've just been rereading the text, it occurs to me that it is actually a bit of a glaring omission. I can understand the point that, yes, it would be included under all the other organisations or types of organisation there, but... the fact that it isn't there might be read into that they were not considered to be a significantly interested party, bearing in mind their very basic role in this. So I think I would actually side with Desiree on this, that it probably needs to be put in as one of the distinctive elements in the list rather than just left for assumption when people might say, well, they must have excluded that for a particular reason.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's excluding the bleeding obvious, isn't it? I think I'm reasonably convinced. I was sort of fairly ambivalent, but I think in view of what both Desiree and Martin have said, I'm reasonably convinced that we should include and that it does no harm. How do others feel? Is there anyone who has any specific objection to adding the incumbent? Daniel has his... Oh, no, Daniel's coming into the room. No other comments? Stephen has his hand raised. Stephen.
I concur with your view on that, Keith.
Great, thanks.
All right, let's wordsmith exactly where this is going, because I think we'd all like to be done with this document. Should I simply add it to the list of organizations, companies, associations, educational institutions, incumbent operator, or others, or at the end of direct material, legitimate, demonstrable interest in the operation of the CCTLD brackets, such as the incumbent operator?
Good question. And both Stephen and Martin have their hands raised, so I think that may... Oh, no, Stephen's just taken his hand down. So Martin has his hand raised, and I think this might relate to the earlier point anyway. Martin?
No, it was in direct response to your question where to stick it. In the politest use of that phrase. And I think Bernie's approach sounds okay to me, that you do include it under B. The reason I put my hand up was to suggest that this could be right at the end of the sentence where you just say including the incumbent operator. So it is clear that it is included. But without sort of people then saying, why are they specifically referring to it, which was why I must admit I was a bit ambivalent about whether you needed to include it or not include it in the first place.
Okay, and Desiree has her hand raised too. Desiree.
I would I'd like to concur that it would be, if we had a choice, were to put it the first part of Section B to for it to be included at the end of a sentence, as Bernie proposed.
Okay, well, we have a remarkable alignment of views. Any opposing view? Bernie, have you got a clear direction there?
I think so. So at the end of Section B of 711, we will tag on including the incumbent operator.
Great. Okay. No other questions or issues?
There is one more on 711, hopefully the final one. Nigel posted his usual reasoning for including significant in the list of adjectives at the end of B. Currently we have direct material, legitimate, and demonstrable interest in the operation of the CCTLD. Nigel felt that we should have significant given its a definition of significantly interested parties. The two counter-arguments to that is that it's a definition of significantly interested parties, so one would certainly expect that it would be significant. The second one came from Becky, which noted that anything that is material should cover the significant part. However, we will be glad to take direction on this so we can put this to bed.
I guess that's a little bit difficult without Nigel on the call.
I can pull up his email and read the reasons for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any discussion? Desiree, is your hand up again, or did you forget to take it down?
Sorry, I'll take it down.
Thank you. Any discussions or comments? Okay, Benny, did you find the email?
Going to get it in about 20 seconds, if you can stretch the time here.
Okay. I don't recall seeing a lot of comments. Oh, I think there were a few comments on the list, but two or three people sort of indicating that significant wouldn't be a bad word to use. In the context, and again, I'm not particularly fussed either way, and could be persuaded either way.
I have Nigel's original email. I will raise the following on the call if I can make it. In the definition of SIP, we say the government is automatically SIP. A non-government actor is SIP if it has an interest that is direct, material, legitimate, and demonstrable. I agree with this, but this definition encompasses a minor interest. I still think there needs to be a qualifier to express the size of the interest, i.e. that interest is significant. So I suppose adding the word significant. It cannot hurt, as Eberhard points out, it's contained in the expression SIP, and for the above reason, I think it helps distinguish and identify SIPs from IPs. There we go, sir.
I guess the question is, does anyone have any objection and I assume the wording that Nigel is looking for is comma or others that have a significant direct comma material comma legitimate and demonstrable interest in the operation of the CCTLD. And so does anyone have any objection to the addition of the word significant in that context? If not, then I suggest we go with it. And again, on the basis that it doesn't appear to me to do harm to the clarity we're seeking. I see Martin has his hand up, so Martin.
Thanks, Keith. Just to note that I thought that Nigel had proposed another word in the later email, but as I'm scrolling through my emails, I'm failing to turn it up. I had it in my head that it was yesterday, but I say I can't see it.
A few days ago, and I think it was actually Eberhard that proposed it.
No, I thought Eberhard said, yes, that's right. But anyway, there was another word other than significant, which from a neatness point of view, describing significant as somebody who has a significant interest does sound just a little bit like a circular approach to it all. I'm not too fussed one way or another, but I did just for a moment when I saw that.
The word was substantial. I've got it.
Substantial, yes. Yeah. I've just turned it up as well. Nigel flagged that. Eberhard replied yes. And that seemed to me perhaps helping to avoid the circularity of the definition.
Okay, so we would add substantial as the first adjective in the laundry list?
Yeah.
Okay. Done.
Can I suggest actually it might be later in the laundry list?
Where would you like it, Martin?
Frankly, my dear. bearing in mind the basic principle comes in material. I'm not too worried one way or another. It just seemed to me that it might be sort of a lower down the list item, the same material, legitimate, demonstrable, and substantial interest. But I'm not going to die in any ditch over that one.
All right, I'll stick it somewhere in the middle. And with that, sir, I think we're done this document, unless someone else has any other comments. Over to you.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we're coming back to have a final review of 7.1.1 on the 8th of December with those two tweaks to it, and that we've agreed 7.1.1.1 at long last. So we nearly have a final document once again. So before we close the SIP document, any further final comments from anyone in regard to these specific clauses or anything else? If not, forever hold your peace. Thank you. Okay, moving on the agenda. The next item we have is public consultations and an update on where we're at. Is it Bart or Bernie who will give us an update?
I can do it. There have been no comments still on the consent public consultation, which will end middle of next week.
It's ending for the public, but not quite ending for the GAC at this point.
That is correct. We will leave it open until the middle of January for the GAC.
Okay, and so on that basis, a last-minute flurry of responses will undoubtedly come in. Just for the record, Bill Senich has just joined the group, and probably for the record too, Stephen Deerhake did join the call at some point. So the process for the SIP consultation, do we have a timeline in mind, Bart and Benny, as to when we, I'm guessing we'll go through exactly the same process with about the same time frame. Any ideas of when we should aim to start, assuming that we will clear the document on our next call on the 8th of December?
Really, it's up to the group. We're ahead of the schedule, so there's one line of thought which sort of says stick to our schedule and let's not get the GAC frustrated. However, if we are done and happy, we can certainly post it for public comment while still sticking with our agreed schedule with the GAC, and that doesn't change anything, and personally that would be my preference. So technically, if we agree on the 8th of December, we probably can get this up before the end of the year, and so for all those people that get bored on the end of calendar year break, if they do get some, they have something to look at. Over
Bernie,
to you, sir.
We need, Bernie, this is Bart, we still need to do, put it in the same mold as the first interim report. This is the second interim report.
Yes.
So if we're going to publish it, it will be, so the interim report will be ready around, say, before Christmas. And then the group needs to read it, and then we can post it. So I would suggest to aim somewhere for middle of January.
That's why I was iffy. Yes, we do have to reformat it and put in the same headers. So we probably can get, I mean, from a practical point of view, let's call it that on the first working group call of the year, we will have the draft public consultation document out to you for a week,
yep,
and we can get it approved.
Yeah.
Okay, and so we'd probably, in that case, be still in the consultation round during the next ICANN meeting, whenever it is, I think, second week of March.
Yeah, and I think it's advisable for the group as well. because it's if it's out for public comment, doesn't matter. And the group needs to focus on the first interim report as well to finalize it. That needs to be posted as well way ahead of the Costa Rica meeting to get support from the CCNSO and the GNSO. The GAC, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think it's quite useful to have a current consultation going when we're at ICANN, because it's an ideal opportunity for anyone who's particularly interested to come and achieve some clarifications and so on. We'll start to make some moves to progress to that stage. Any other comments? Bill, I saw your hand raised and then dropped.
I was just letting you know I'm finally kind of broke away from breakfast and I'm here on the call.
Excellent. Yep, I noticed that. And we're making record time through the call. It's amazing what you can do without a North American audience in the room.
hey, watch that.
I'd put you down as an American Samoan, Stephen.
Okay, I'll take the Pacific region Appalachian.
Okay, moving along on the agenda, we're on to item 5 on the agenda, terminology, the approval of the definition of SIP. Is there anything more? Bernie, where are we with that?
We've reworked it, so I will repost it along with 2.9 of SIP, we will go for final approval on 8 December.
Okay.
Unless people have other comments, but given how tightly those two are intertwined, I can't imagine.
Yep. So it's the direct list of 7.1.1, isn't it? And I guess the question is, does anyone have any comments on the intended definition or for the terminology paper other than the changes made? Is it worthwhile putting the document up since it's only a two-paragraph document, Benny?
I'd be happy to see that.
I'm not going to change the screen from what it is right now because it's an exact copy of 7.1.1. I don't know if you caught the modifications, Bill. First of all, we'll go over it for everyone and yourself. Definition of significantly interested parties. As it reads currently in 2.7, significantly interested parties include but are not limited to A, the government or territorial authority for the country or territory associated with the CCTLD, and B, any other individuals, organizations, companies, associations, educational institutions, or others that have a direct, material, legitimate, and demonstrable interest in the operation of the CCTLD, bracket S, period. We've agreed to add at the end of that section, after bracket S, close bracket, including the incumbent operator. And we've also agreed to add Nigel's request for substantial somewhere in the middle of the list of adjectives. So it would probably be direct, material, substantial, legitimate, and demonstrable interest in the operation of the CCTLD, including the incumbent operator.
Okay. And so, So the only other thing that appears in the definition paper is the reference to RFC 1591, which states significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party. And other than that, it's just a repeat of that definition. So it should be pretty straightforward. Let's do the changes and recirculate for the next call then, Bernie.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Since we're making such good time, the next topic on the agenda is some general discussion on revocation. And And Bernie, do you want to give us your thinking?
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's less my thinking, but more a question of how we're going to interpret the various things. And we know that this is a very critical and sensitive subject for many of the people on the call. The first point, which is very clear, is in section 3.5 of RFC 1591, which basically says, and if you'll give me a second, I'll pull it up so I don't misquote, because with Bill around, I would feel very bad. Reference documents. RFC 1591. I haven't forgotten about you. Coming up. Okay. So, in section 3.5 of RFC 1591, it's fairly clear. The designated manager must do a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain. That is, the actual management of the assigning of domain names, delegating subdomains, and operating name servers must be done with technical competence. This includes keeping the central IR, in the case of top-level domains, or other higher-level domain manager advised of the status of the domain, responding to requests in a timely manner, and operating the database with accuracy, robustness, and resilience. There must be a primary and secondary name server that have IP connectivity to the Internet and can be easily checked for operational status and database accuracy by the IR and IANA. In cases where there are persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain, the delegation may be revoked and possibly delegated to another designated manager. Full stop. So that's our first point. Obviously, you know, as with the rest of RFC 1591, there is no further interpretation of what doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service means. And there is no definition of what persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain means. It's fairly clear what delegation may be revoked means and possibly delegated. So that's our first one, and maybe I'll take comments, thoughts. And really the idea here is, before we start writing, to try and gather input just to make sure we're trying to capture the essence of thoughts in the group around that. So anything you can contribute in thoughts would certainly be appreciated.
Okay, any questions?
Actually, just to jump in, Bernie, when it says may be revoked and possibly delegated to another designated manager, actually, that doesn't...
You're fading in and out, Bill, very badly. I don't know if it's just...
Okay, is that an improvement?
Ah, yep. Much better. Thank you.
Where it says possibly the delegation may be revoked and possibly delegated to another designated manager, I don't think that's as clear-cut as one might want to think. You know, may be revoked sort of implies, in my mind anyway, the provision of some kind of cure period, i.e., slapping of the hand and, you know, straighten up and fly right, or else.
I don't think we're arguing that at all. In my mind, it's just that from a revocation point, at the end of a long series of actions, there is the clear possibility of revocation. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that's the only option here.
The issue for me is this: may be revoked and possibly delegated to another designated manager. I'm a little concerned about how we're going to deal with that sort of conflicting or contradictory concept, because if it is revoked and it's not delegated to another designated manager, what does that mean?
Well, I think that's the issue we're all going to have to wrestle with. I certainly, don't think, or I haven't read anyone having given a very perfect interpretation of this or even proposed a coherent one. So I think the challenge for us as a group is going to be working through those things and somehow coming up with a scheme that's going to allow us to make all the various bits and pieces fit together in a coherent fashion.
Yeah. Okay, that was just a comment on the lack of simplicity in even the simplest sentences.
Yep. I think you raise a very good point, Bill, and I imagine that there are some overarching aspects both in IANA's own processes and with the ICANN board that whatever they do no harm, and obviously revoking an active CCTLD and then possibly or possibly not redelegating it or delegating it to another designated manager would indicate that they'd be breaking the internet, therefore doing harm. So perhaps we should start considering some wording that may come out of the bylaws and so on. I see Martin has his hand raised. So, Martin.
Yes, if I can just ask what is probably a completely dumb question, but in 3.5, it seems to me that the RFC only gives grounds for revocation in the case of there being persistent problems, and those problems, as listed immediately above that statement, are all the technical competence of the management of the TLD. And there is nothing, no role in that bit for significantly interested parties to have a say. Am I reading that right, or is it just the fact that I haven't read and remembered to examination standard the whole of RFC 1591 yet?
Oh, I believe that's correct, Martin. We're not talking about significantly interested parties having a stake here. I guess what is implied, and that's what the group will have to confirm, or the working group will have to confirm, that this is a judgment call from the authority.
And the grounds, and the only grounds from RFC 1591, is the technical competence of managing the TLD. Is that right?
That is correct.
Agreed. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I wonder too, Bernie, if in the new GTLD process there are any statements expanding or defining what is meant by the requests in a timely manner and operating the database with accuracy and robustness, whether there's any kind of colour or depth that arises in the definitions or specifications given in for these prospective new GTLD operators, and whether we mightn't be able to find something there that could be useful for us.
As far as I know, for IDN CCTLDs, the paperwork doesn't specify anything new. Am I correct in that part?
Yeah, I think I can probably venture to answer that for Bart. No. IDN CCTLDs didn't have any additional requirements over existing CCTLDs. I was thinking more of the new GTLDs.
As far as the GTLDs, I'm unfamiliar, but it's an interesting point to follow up for one of our next calls, and I'll be glad to do so unless someone actually has the information. Probably Kim could tell us, but he's not on the call today.
Desiree has her hand raised. Desiree.
Well, I think, yes, we should discuss it on the call. Since Kim is not here, there'll certainly be
different technical requirements than their current ones, but they're not explained anywhere apart from compliance with a certain list of RFCs when you operate a DNS. And so the IPv6 and DNSSEC is not something that is currently part of the IDN fast track for CCTLD, according to my knowledge, that there will be in the new GTLD round, for example.
Yeah, I'm thinking more of where there are issues that are suggested require technical competence. In RFC 1591, it's left as a very subjective set of possible measures, and just if there were slightly more objective measurements to say what a DNS uptime might be, when they say responding to requests in a timely manner, does that mean registering a domain name within 9 nanoseconds or something, and that might have been quite a bit of work, or there may have been quite a bit of work done on that for the new GTLD process. I'm not suggesting for a moment that we try and expand the brief to cover newer technologies like requiring DNSSEC or anything like that, just purely those things that are already specified in 1591. So I think could be worth a read, Bernie, and only useful to comment if there are items that might add colour and depth. And so a follow-up discussion with Kim, or an initial discussion with Kim, and then following up if he thinks it's worthwhile.
Will do.
Okay. Any other comments in that regard, in regard to those... bits of leading to revocations? If not, do you have anything else, Bernie?
Yes, our second point goes to section 3.4 of RFC 1591. significantly interested parties. This is where we have the IANA tries to have any contending parties reach agreement amongst themselves and generally takes no action to change things unless all contending parties agree, only in cases where the designated manager has substantially misbehaved would the IANA step in. Now, there's probably a laundry list of issues with this. We certainly... have a number of people that claim 3.4 of RFC 1591 only applies to delegations, and we're going to have to get ourselves through that. If there is an agreement in the group that it can apply to delegated domains, the next point is what does substantially misbehave mean, because there's really absolutely no other reference anywhere about that. And finally, it says the INS can step in, and again, there is no other reference to that. So obviously, there are some issues surrounding that, the possibility that we could end up interpreting this as a basis which could generate a revocation. But this is one of the items I feel we're going to have to finish going through as a group and reach a consensus. Over to you, sir.
Yep. Yes, talking about subjectivity versus objectivity, substantial misbehavior and then no following definition is highly subjective. Does anyone have any comments, any ideas in this regard? I mean, I see a lot of impossibilities. I mean, where you have substantially misbehaved and IANA steps in, what are they stepping in to do? Are they stepping in to fix the problem, or are they stepping in to revoke and redelegate?
I think it's one of the things we're just going to have to, you know, very carefully walk our way through and just create a very solid foundation so that we can keep building on it, so that we can finish generating an interpretation that can be a consensus view of the group.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a comment. I guess I should raise my hand. Okay.
Sure.
Raise my hand.
Yeah, sure, Bill, but you're just fading away again a bit, so...
Okay, it has always been my impression, our understanding, that this is a process towards a revocation process and not some other alternative mechanism. I mean, by the IANA stepping in, basically it means, okay, then we'll go down to this process of revoking it and assigning it to someone else. Not, there's some other parallel, but not the same process where you could change who the manager is.
Thank you, Bill.
So, yep. I'll put my hand down.
Thanks.
From postings from Eberhardt and conversations I've had with him, I believe his position is the same as yours on that.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. No other comments? I can see we're going to have some fun with all of this, Bernie.
Yes, endless fun coming up. I'm sure we can certainly foresee many hours of discussion on specific terms and where commas are placed. But then this is our remit to come up with, I mean, let's be clear, RFC 1591 has been there for, 30 years? And no one's ever touched that because there has never been a revocation of a domain by IANA that I'm aware of. We're really in uncharted waters here, and I think this is the meat of our work that's coming up, and we're really going to need everyone's thinking cap to generate something that is interesting and reasonable. Of course, from the points that can lead to a possible revocation, then we're going to have to come up with some guidelines about what revocation means and the steps to that, because I think, as Bill has pointed out earlier, it's fine to say something can cause revocation. It doesn't mean that you wake up one morning and say, okay, we've got the basis for this, we're revoking the domain tomorrow morning. I don't think anyone in this group in their right mind would ever think that that would happen. And I think it's part of our job also, once we finish cleaning up the elements for these things, exactly what that means. There's probably also another point which we're going to have to deal with, and that is Section 7 of the GAC principles, which probably Martin can talk to us a bit more about. But basically... in Section 7 of the GAC principles, we've got a section which sort of says, not sort of says, which typically says, delegation and redelegation is a national issue and should be resolved nationally and in accordance with national laws, taking into account the views of all stakeholders and the rights of the existing CCTLD registry. Once a formal decision has been reached, ICANN should act promptly to initiate the process of delegation or redelegation in line with the authoritative instructions. Where the Registry 721 under guidelines, where the registry operating the country code's TLD does not have a formal communication with national government and its core functions are operated under a different jurisdiction, any action to redelegate needs to take into account the legal framework of the country where the registry is based. So basically, there's a lot of talk about laws and various other things, and I think we're probably going to have to look at how this dovetails into our interpretations of RFC 1591 and how that works, because I may be incorrect, but I don't think we have a choice, because otherwise we wouldn't be going through or completing our mandate properly. So a lot of stuff to think and adjust and look at. Over to you, sir.
Yep, all good fun. Any further comments on revocation as a topic? Any further discussion? No. Anything else, Bernie, on the topic?
I don't think so. I think we're going to start nice and slow on this one. Those are the comments we've got to date. You know, use the old metaphor of how do you eat an elephant, and they one small piece at a time. So I guess starting with our next meeting, we'll start looking at various very small chunks of this to see if we can start moving it forward, because I can certainly see this being a long process for us.
I thought the way to eat an elephant was to start at the tail and stop when you hit the tusks. Okay, so nothing further on revocation. Our next item on the agenda is the follow-up on transcripts of calls, and I'm not sure exactly why that's on our agenda. Bernie, can you enlighten us?
Well, we published our first, just for those that haven't been on calls, we are now publishing transcripts of these calls, which we hope will make it easier for those who miss a call. We had Eberhardt that was ecstatic about the first one and posted a comment. So two things here. The first thing is to, again, note that we're doing this. So if you miss a meeting, and the transcription from what I saw the last one is truly excellent. So there is really a good record of what's on the call, and as several people have pointed out, it's a heck of a lot easier to follow a transcript than to re-listen to the audio version of a call. The second thing to see if anyone's actually gone through those, and if they have comments, positive or negative.
I've had a couple of private comments that the transcripts are very useful. So, and Desiree's just also added that in the chat, and so has Cheryl. So it's a good idea and working well.
So then, if there are no negative comments, we'll keep going to it.
Excellent. Yeah, there is a cost, and so I guess the thing that we should assure ourselves as a working group is that it is useful to people as a result of that cost.
Because it's about between $500 and $700 per call to get the transcript out.
However, okay, and if there's no comments on the transcripts, other than those, and Carlos also says that transcripts are useful, so only positive comments received, so we'll continue. Any other business? We have our little meeting schedule somewhere. Our next meeting is on the 8th of December at 2100 UTC. And then one more possible call before Christmas on December the 22nd at 0500 UTC. Is there any other business, any other item that anyone wishes to raise at this point? If not, I think we've all earned an hour's bonus by completing today's in 1 hour. So well done, everybody. Thank you. And we'll speak again on the 8th of December. Thank you all very much.
Thank you all. Bye.